Love Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the house of God, I know I can be strong.
Good evening, happy Shabbat to one and all. Welcome to Yada Yah Radio. I'm here with JB and Kirk, and today's program is brought to you by the verb mool. Mool means to circumcise. I want to begin where we left off with Bereshit, Genesis 17:10, because the first half of the verse is amongst my favorite, because it just defines everything that I've come to recognize is true about what Yahweh was interested in, what He is expecting of us, what He is offering in return, how we come to know Him, how we come to be part of His family. The basis of that relationship and of salvation. And it just begins, this specific zot, this one and only, this singular, familial covenant of mine, this family agreement, this household accord of mine, which beneficially marks the way to the relationship, which shows the path to this fortunate and joyful place, and is found by walking the correct way, thereby revealing the steps which lead to life, you should continuously observe, closely examining and carefully considering. And to do so as to be discerning, to make an intelligent connection, to understand me, and for you to perceive, be perceptive and prudent regarding the association. I don't know how you get better than that. It's one, only one of them.
Yeah.
The covenant is a family, happens to be God's family. It was of mine. He only has one. That means there can't be a New Testament. That means there cannot be a new covenant. It's one. It's Yahweh's, not something that belongs to a particular race. It belongs to God Himself. And He has but one of them. And it's His, and it happens to be His family. Asher, which...
You ain't got to be a part of it, but if you want to...
Yeah, you don't have to be. He's opening the door. You've got to know where to find it. And you've got to walk inside along the path He's provided. And Asher is the relationship word that leads us the way from where we are to where God is. And the way that you find that path, the way that you enter His home, is singular. It isn't through faith. It isn't by being good. It isn't by praising God. It isn't by worshiping God. It isn't by being humble. It isn't a gift. It does not come to those who are religious. There's only one way that you can find this path and avail yourself of it. And that is to shamar, to be observant, to closely examine and carefully consider what God had to say about it so that you can be discerning, and make an intelligent connection to understand the Creator of the universe and His role in that family. If you are not observant, then there is no hope whatsoever for salvation. None. Understanding is a result of knowing. Knowing is the byproduct of being observant. It's really just that simple. That's the path to God.
You know, I saw someone wearing a shirt this week, and this is, it was just such the opposite of that entire message. You've heard the statement, you know, fake it till you make it. This one was, yeah, faith it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
Just have faith in it until you, yeah, until what?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in your religion, faith is your end goal. You know, until you make what? You know, faith isn't going to get you anywhere. You know, look into something, research something until you understand it. That makes sense.
Right. Particularly
faith,
when.
Just have faith in it until, you know, it's part of you. Until you stop questioning.
God himself provides 1,000 reasons to reject the faith of Christianity, the faith of Islam, the faith of Judaism. When God himself provides those insights and you ignore them, you're an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the second part of this is something that it didn't dawn on me what God was actually saying until today. And, you know, I was, my first reaction, I'm going to read this, I'll tell you my first reaction, and I said, no, that's not it at all. Oh, sure, it might be, but that's not the primary reason these words were written. It reads, so to form a thoughtful relationship and make a comprehensible connection between your offspring following you, you should circumcise. You should remove the force warding off a deadly and debilitating curse by way of this oath. Accordingly, every male to help them remember their status. So my first response was, okay, God is specifically associating circumcision, the part of the male anatomy that is responsible for conceiving life.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's great. That's clearly right here. It says circumcision is being associated with your offspring after you. That's why it's done there. So that we would understand the connection between circumcision being a sign of the covenant, our oath, and being part of God's family. And so I read that and said, yeah, that affirms something that I've long thought. And then I read it again. I don't think that was the primary meaning at all.
Okay.
So to form a thoughtful relationship and make a comprehensible connection between your offspring following you, you should circumcise, warding off a deadly and debilitating curse by way of this oath. Accordingly, every male to help them remember their status. What is the greatest curse, according to God, in all of human history? The one curse that he must repeat over and over again to say it is the plague of death.
Death. Paul. Paulos.
Calling Christianity.
Calling Christianity.
What was Paul's primary argument against God in the Torah?
Circumcision.
That's it. The only reason
for
that
the Jerusalem Council.
Right. The entire reason he was brought into the Jerusalem Council, the entire reason he had a conflict, besides his enormous ego, with Yahu Kanan and the fact he was a complete fraud, and Jacob, and with Shimon Kefish, was because he was promoting the notion that circumcision is counterproductive. So, if you are going to ward off this curse of Pauline Christianity, understand the importance of circumcision. Because that's the place where Paul made this myth that circumcision, because it's of the flesh, is evil. It's Gnosticism. and that faith, because it's of the Spirit, is good. The Greek religion, the Greek philosophy. That's why it appealed to Greeks and Romans. It was the antithesis of what God said. Circumcision is the fulcrum upon which the most popular religion in the history of mankind, the deadliest plague in human history, that is the fulcrum upon which it pivots. And if you understand that the role of circumcision is being part of the covenant, and that God's not kidding around, He's not going to change the conditions for us to be part of His family, and that this notion that Paul promoted, that the God who inspired the Torah was a nincompoop, that he had no idea what he was doing, that his Torah and his plan couldn't save anybody. So the circumcision is now counterproductive. God is saying just the opposite. This is a warning to all who would listen that the world's most popular religion is a deadly plague. And I want to tell you, Christian, if you're listening, there is no way whatsoever to disassociate Paul, Christianity, and his attacks on circumcision. All you have to do is read the book of Acts, read the book of Galatians. You can't deny it. And yet, what you have been told is Scripture. It's the antithesis of what the Creator of the universe actually said. That makes
you. This is the reason I've dedicated so much time to researching, you know, circumcision. It's literally this exact verse. Is, you know, I was translating through Genesis at the time while you were writing Questioning Paul, and I was kind of, now I would say playing devil's advocate, but at the time I was still trying to really, I was on the fence on Paul, and I didn't know what to think, but I was trying to basically figure out every way, well, yeah, you know, you're saying Paul said this, but he could be this, and, you know, that's in line, so, yeah, I was, you know, playing that middle of the road, trying to figure it all out. And I happened to come across this right as you were translating what Paul had to say in Galatians about circumcision, and that for me was it. There was no way about it. There was no way. You know, there's a lot of stuff Paul says you can twist and make it fit the Torah. But I'm okay with someone wants to do that. But that's what a lot of people do. They were twisted to make it fit. But when it came to circumcision, you could not twist that. Paul was dead clear on his view of circumcision. And Yahweh was dead clear on his view.
That is correct. You know, what's interesting, too, is that circumcision is zakar.
Mm-hmm.
It's to help us remember our status. It's to memorialize this agreement. That's why zakar was chosen and not Ben, son. It's Zakar, so that we know our... What is our status? Our status is to be covenant children in Yahweh's family.
Separate.
That's what our status is. What are we supposed to remember? We're supposed to remember that the covenant was presented through Abraham, and it includes five terms and conditions, and this is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you forget that, you're going to be susceptible to the plague of death. Pauline Christianity. That's powerful. And the world has ignored it and yawned. Sad. I mean, that verse destroys everything. It destroys a New Testament, a new covenant, salvation through faith, the religion of Christianity, 100% of Paul's credibility, and therefore all 13 of his letters. The book of Acts.
In most of Acts.
Destroys it all. It completely obliterates any chance that Christianity has of being truthful. If you're a Christian, your faith is in a deadly plague.
You'll get sadly helpful. It is detrimental to you.
That is correct. Hugely detrimental to you. I'm going to read... 17:11, and I think Kirk, he hasn't shared what his questions are, but JB, be ready. He's told me he's got a couple of questions.
Well,
they're
not that hard.
Okay. All right. Well, we won't panic. You know, it's always fun to say, you know, I don't know. I haven't thought about that before. But it's also fun to say, you know, I know the answer to that because Yahweh told us the answer. Both of those are fun.
Yeah.
And, well, by the way, before I go to it, I should share something that came in an email to me today. Mul, which is the verb that is bringing us today's program, it is three letters. The first letter of mul, what letter is that?
Mem.
Mem. Okay. How is the mem depicted?
Like water.
Yeah, like water. How many peaks are there in mem to create those waves?
Three.
How many states are there of water?
Three.
Yeah.
Ice, liquid, solid, and gas.
Solid and gas. And is water its states unlike any other compound in the known universe, where it's actually less dense in its frozen form? If that was not true, the Earth could not support life. So anyway,
life is comes out of the water. Where they look for it, they're looking for water.
Yeah. And you look at a family. To have a family, how many individuals do you have to have?
Three.
You really can't have a family with two.
At least three.
Yeah, three is the minimum, isn't it? Yeah, how many ways does Yahweh manifest his nature to us? His Father, Heavenly Father, Spiritual Mother.
Mm-hmm.
And as the diminished manifestation, the Son.
Yeah, kind of like us.
Yeah. Interesting. So the source of life and the world's universal solvent, all depicted in the letter. I just thought that was an interesting insight into to Mul. Oh, by the way, just as an interesting aside, the last letter in Mul.
Mm-hmm.
What's it?
It's a lem.
Lamed.
Yeah. Lamed. Yeah. And how is a lamed drawn?
It's a staff.
It is. And that chaff is actually inverted, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
The opposite way that
it's being
the pooper and all the great poopers of Roman Catholicism hold their staff with a crook end.
They're not helping anybody out.
That's correct. This one, it's crook end down. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because the other end, the straight end, is being held by God to lift those fallen sheep up. It's pretty interesting, isn't it? But the last letter is the implement that a shepherd uses to lead and protect his sheep.
Well, let me throw something else at you that came to me today. I was looking at the Mo and the nun. The nun is the number 50. 50 is a Yobel. So what you could have, reasonably, you could have freedom of these generations, of these people, is brought to you basically by the cleansing spirit and her leadership. I mean, that may be a little stretch, but still.
Yeah, but no, you know,
in 950, we have a Yobel. We're all at the freedom. That is free people. It's a free generation, not enslaved.
Yep. So let's read 17:11, and particularly in this context. And you shall make a declaration by cutting off and separating. This is malal. You shall truthfully, this is such an interesting word because it's always just rendered cut in English Bibles. And yet, Hebrew has a word that means cut. And it's not malal. The word that means cut is an extremely important, oft-repeated verb in Hebrew. It's karat.
Mm-hmm.
The covenant is always karat. It's cut, like we cut a deal. You cut you into something. You know, can you cut me in? But this is Mahal. The primary meaning of Mahal is to make a truthful proclamation, to make an announcement regarding an important principle. The subtle means of communicating, which is part and parcel of being separated and set apart. So you shall make a declaration by cutting off and separating Baal. Your foreskins. Association with the flesh. So it is a separation from the flesh. I guess Paul must have missed that part. What does he say? He says that circumcision is of the flesh, and therefore it's evil. Yahweh says, no. Circumcision is the idea of making a declaration by cutting off and separating your foreskin's association with the flesh. Why? Because the flesh rots and dies. Nothing wrong with the flesh, but it's mortal. Nothing wrong with the flesh, but it's limited. You know, when you're part of Yah's covenant family, you are unlimited. You're immortal. Being part of God's family and being a spiritual entity like light, you're perfect. You're empowered. You're enlightened. You're enriched. You've got to separate from the flesh to get there. That's one of the reasons why it's just so unbelievably moronic in Christianity that they celebrate Easter as a bodily resurrection. No, the whole idea is being separated from the flesh. That's why no one recognized him. That's why he could teleport. That's why he could walk through walls. It's being separated from the flesh that you want. No physical bodies in heaven. Being matter matters. Because so long as we are physical beings, we cannot be immortal. We can't transcend the 3.5 dimensions that we're stuck in. We can't come into God's presence. Everything is shut down for us if we remain physical beings. So circumcision is about being set apart, disassociating from the flesh, the world of man, and entering the world of God. And this will exist as the sign to remember both the family-oriented covenant relationship between me for the purposes of making a connection and between you to promote understanding. As a sign, it will exist. It will exist, the verb there. You ever seen that verb before, guys?
Hiya?
What's the verb for hiya? Yeah,
hiya. And it appears a few times.
Yeah. And is there any association between that verb, it will exist, and the spirit that spoke these words?
Mm-hmm. It shares three of the same letters.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No.
In fact, you know, it's interesting, too, is that there's only one letter in Yahweh's name that's repeated, right? The hey?
Yep.
There's one letter repeated in Haya, the hey. And the middle letter in Haya is a yod, which is Yahweh's hand reaching down and out to us. Yahweh said that his name is based on this verb, to exist. Why? Because he's saying to his people, I exist. And if you recognize that I exist, you too can be with me. Haya. That's not in just your average verb there. And then it's followed by oath. Is there an English word that's similar to this Hebrew word, oath?
I'd like to say that would be oath.
Oath. Yeah, oath in Hebrew is a sign to remember, an example to visually illustrate and explain, a symbol and standard, a pledge, sometimes even of a miraculous nature. Singular, as in one and only sign. So now we know that Haya, circumcision, will exist as a sign to remember what? That you're Jewish? No.
No.
That God's a cosmic killjoy? No.
No.
How about that circumcision is the sign to remember the family-oriented covenant relationship?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, not just this covenant. Understand the covenant is between me for the purpose of making a connection, and between you to promote understanding. Bien. Wa bien. Probably the most important of all Hebrew words, to understand. Well, that's right in your face, isn't it? That's pretty hard to work around, and it's powerful. God is explaining the purpose and the power of circumcision, the very thing that Paul would use to create Christianity. So what are your questions, Kirk?
It was a very simple one. As I was reading this, I made a little note off to the side, and I said, why would y'all talk so much about circumcision and then avoid it? If you were trying to convince me that Christianity was true, regardless of whether harmful or not, just that there was some legitimacy to it, how could he do that?
Yeah, this is the
previous scenario where that would be
just one on circumcision, and then this next one's again on circumcision, explaining it. And then the next one is again on circumcision, and the next one is again on circumcision, followed by one on circumcision.
When a teacher talks lectures that much, you have to believe you better put it in your notes and understand what it's
better put it in your notes.
Yeah, but the first time he says that, you ought to realize the importance.
Yeah.
You know, and fortunately, for all of us, there is a test, but the test is open book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I pointed that out to someone, like, you know, Christians make a huge deal over homosexuality. How often does Yahweh address homosexuality?
A couple of times,
once.
And it's in a really
once
long
or twice,
list.
At most.
Yeah, I think it's twice.
Yeah. It's barely mentioned, but that's their huge focus for religious Christians. How often does Yahweh speak of circumcision?
Constantly.
Oh.
Which one do you think is more important to him?
His covenant.
Hey, it's black and white. Even when he talks about homosexuality, it's in a laundry list of things that that God views as sexually perverted. That bestiality, for example. Incest. Rape. Those kinds of things. So he's not interested.
He's definitely not saying. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but the focus they put on it is ridiculous by comparison to things that are actually important to Yahweh.
Homosexuality isn't even 1/1000 of 1% of Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms message to us. Not even 1/1000 of 1%. It's just irrelevant to him. And it's as close to being irrelevant as something could be. But, of course, evangelical Christianity has made it their litmus test. Their primary issue. Because for darn sure they can't deal with any other forms of sexual perversity, although they'll rail out against them. You know, the priests and pastors are about as perverted as anybody on the planet. It's interesting, by the way, that Ma'al, you shall truthfully proclaim and speak about being circumcised. And that's really interesting, that Ma'al is a word that is being chosen here because God said it's not so much that, because he never does explain how much to cut or who to cut it or anything like that. Not what kind of implement, nothing. But he says,
the closest thing you get is that it should be your child on the eighth day.
Yeah, the eighth day is it. That's it. Now, what's interesting here is that God is encouraging us to speak out about it. Now, do you think God wants us to say, "Hey, you want to see my ding-a-ling? I'm circumcised"? No, that's what he's talking about here. Use your words. Use your words to explain the importance of circumcision for our understanding and how it is essential to our participation in the covenant. That's what he wants us to express. And he said, and Ma'al is to truthfully proclaim. Well, there's only one way you can truthfully discuss and announce the importance of circumcision, and that is to have your testimony be consistent with your own. Now, it's also interesting that it was scribed in the Niphil stem, which is used to convey the voice not only of a genuine relationship, but where the subject, which is you here, that means us, expressly as parents, receive the benefit of the verb, which is circumcision. And in the perfect conjugation, designating that this instruction and resulting action should be considered whole and complete. And then the consecutive, thereby associating it with Bashar, flesh. So, isn't it interesting that what God is saying, and this is something I think people get confused over. In fact, we even had a thoughtful email, JB, that you answered beautifully. Somebody was saying, hey, you know, at the end of the last show, we were saying that circumcision doesn't benefit you unless you understand its purpose and its relationship to the Torah. Lots of people are circumcised that aren't going to heaven.
Right.
And there are no people who aren't circumcised who are going to heaven. And so he said, you know, you need to understand the meaning behind it. And, you know, we had someone, a writer, just said, you know, it was done to me when I was a baby. Therefore, I didn't know the meaning of it when it was done to me. That's not
well, and the parents didn't know.
And the parents didn't know.
Yeah, I'm in that same boat, and I think you are too.
Yes, absolutely.
The self is just done.
Right. But
there's no relative.
Once it's
no
done, relative. For it to have to be, whether it's done when you had no say as a child, which is typical, because this wouldn't apply as an adult. If you have it done as an adult, you know why you're doing it, and it's because you want to be consistent with what the Torah says, because this is life and death. But as a child, circumcision only benefits you as a child if at some time in your life you come to understand its purpose and its relationship to the covenant. So it is circumcision only benefits a person if they understand its connection with the covenant and its purpose. Now, that does not mean that your circumcision as a child doesn't benefit you. Well, it does, but only when, as an adult,
like physically, yeah,
you come to understand what God is conveying here.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how to word it when I was writing that reply, but yeah. I was thinking about it in terms of, you know, you look at, you know, Yahweh is outside of time. In Hebrew, the language is written as a timeless language. And
right.
In that context, order doesn't matter.
Right.
Rather, you get circumcised and then come to know Yahweh, or you come to know Yahweh and then get circumcised, doesn't matter.
Right.
From Yahweh's perspective, it's all the same.
Right. Right. By the way, I used to use timeless, too, because that's how we describe something where time just exists. We use the term timeless, but of course in English it's time and then less, which would be less time. And Hebrew verbs are time full. They're time complete. They're time inclusive. They're all time is the nature of Hebrew verbs, so that Hebrew verbs are like light. Light exists for all time. It literally defines time. So it's a powerful thought here that the beneficiary of child circumcision wants the parents.
You remember Carol when she passed away, one of our covenant members. She had a son and two sons, and the one had the difficulty, but the doctor allowed her to came up with that here without asking, you know, to solve that problem. The most beneficial that was for her, because she did everything she could once she knew to get her sons circumcised, and she got one of them circumcised before she passed away. So,
she was the beneficiary.
Yes,
now, her son could also end up someday in his life becoming a beneficiary.
Yes.
But in the short term, she was a beneficiary.
Yes.
Absolutely.
She's done what y'all had asked her to do.
Right. So sometimes when women say, okay, this is for men to be circumcised. What about for women? Well, think about it. If a man is circumcised as consistent with the Iowa's instructions by their parents on his parents on the eighth day, the male child has nothing to do with it. They're not cognizant of what's going on. So it's only benefiting the parents, mom and dad. And the Iowa has used a verb here in the niffle to convey that very thought. So mothers, women in particular, are the prime beneficiary of circumcision. This will exist as a sign to remember, family or your covenant relationship. I think there's only two signs of the covenant. The seven pure colors of light comprise the rainbow.
Thank you, pardon. Yes, absolutely.
Where you divide light into those seven colors, green in the middle. Roy G. Biv, Roy, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. Everything with Yahweh is 6 + 1 = 7. Man plus God equals the idea of perfection. And so you've got the rainbow, which appeared at the confirming that the entire story with Noah was a story of the covenant. And now, here's circumcision. By the way, you know, rainbows are round, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They go through the earth. You just don't see it.
Right. There are times you can see a round rainbow. You see a round rainbow when the moon at night is striking a waterfall, for example. So there are times you can see.
It's one of the most awesome views you can see, too.
Yeah, it really is.
It is. It's striking.
So circumcision is cutting around, and a rainbow is around. So this is being, in fact, there's several Hebrew letters that are drawn round, and the idea is that you are surrounded and protected and separated from a man, just as the ark saved Noah and his family were separated from the rest of humanity. So this is what God is communicating to us here. So, yes, so the first question, Kirk, was why would God repeat himself?
Why would God talk so much about circumcision? And then you try to convince me, a preacher or a Christian tried to convince me that all of a sudden he avoided all that when this is the heart of the covenant, this is the heart of the Torah.
Yes.
We're at the most important part of the story and the entire Torah as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't mean that anything else is not. It's not important, but greatly, for our understanding and lives. But this is, if you get this right, you got something.
The theory is that Kirk, all the rest of the Torah exists to enable this, to explain this, to help us understand this. The entire preamble that leads up to this helps to frame the importance of the covenant.
Yeah.
And everything that follows, especially the Exodus, being removed from the imposition of human religious, political, and military, and economic oppression, so that we can be part of God's family. And then the seven steps that we walk to God through the Moed Mikre. The explanation of the Yovel and the importance of the Yovel of being freed from our debts to be freed from slavery and to have the opportunity to return to the land, which is Yahweh's home. All is part of
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go ahead.
No, my follow-up question was the answer would always be in the Christian world, would always be, well, that's for the Jews, that's for the Yehudim, Israel, if they knew how to say that. And this is something for us. Okay, in a few, if not today, next week, we'll hit 1712, and 1712 covers foreigners who are not Israel, who are not Yehuda.
Correct.
They're a goy, they're slaves, or they're servants. They're either working there, or they have been bought by a price, which is interesting because it's still a redemptive But that being the case, then why? What is the purpose if they can only be they can only benefit? Why can and they cannot benefit? Why are you circumcising these foreigners?
Yeah, of course. That renders the whole thing.
I mean, that's a small.
By the way, sir, can I ask you a question? Let's ask you a couple of questions here.
Yeah.
As Yahweh began to bring up circumcision, did he say this was a thing for Yahudim and Israel?
There are no Yahudim and Israel.
Yeah, didn't
well, that is the answer to my second question.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Was there even? Yeah, well, of course not. He did not mention Israel or Yahudim because they don't even exist, so that the Christian position, well, that's the Jewish thing. I'm sorry.
Well, who the heck was he talking to?
And if he's giving this instruction, he's talking to a Babylonian.
Yeah.
He's talking to a guy that walked out of Babylon.
Yeah.
I'm
his
sorry.
Wife too.
Yeah, his wife too. Yes. So the Christian mythos here is completely inconsistent with Yahweh's testimony.
And my follow-up statement was, this should scare you out of your mind if you are peddling Christianity or believing in him. And questioning Paul, Habakkuk 2, what is it, about 2:15 or 2:16. And may I quote it? You will get your fill, he's talking to Paul, you will get your fill of shame and infamy, a little and lowly status, interesting, Paulos, instead of honor and glory, because you're choosing to intoxicate. In addition, you also elect to show them unacceptable going roundabout over their choice not to become circumcised. Upon you is a binding cup of Yahweh's right hand, serving as a metaphor for judgment. Therefore, public humiliation, lowly status, will be your reward. That should make you scared to death.
Yeah. And he's speaking about Paul, and speaking to us about Paul, because he names him. He says, Shaul.
Yeah, he's called him Shaul, and earlier he's called him Shaul. Yeah.
Right. And the English Bibles would tell you, well, he's talking about Sheol, you know, hell. Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well,
but hell doesn't have a soul, and he specifically said that the nephesh of Shaul.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about Paul. Everything fits Paul, including Paul's animosity towards circumcision. The basis.
Well, very quick.
Once you realize that Galatians is Paul's first letter, and it's his retort, his angry retort to the Jerusalem summit.
Mm-hmm.
Once you recognize that, and that the fulcrum of the argument is on circumcision, everything falls into place. That very second. You come to recognize that Christianity is the very plague of death, and then you tie it to what God told us in Chabaouk. Mind you, 666 years before Paul would pen the letter to the Galatians.
That's right.
You know, the meaning of 666, there it is, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about Paul. Yes, your Christian Antichrist? Already been here. Paul. That's why he never quotes him. That's why his message is the antithesis of his. He is the anti-Christ. It's just as simple as it can be. Paul, you know, they had a movie out, Paul, Apostle of Christ. Paul is the anti-Christ. I mean, it's obvious. All you have to do is read Chabaouk. Read Paul's letters. He is the 666. He's the lowly and little one that Yosha, the Christian Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, speaking specifically of the one that would negate and try to belittle the Torah, he said that he would be all lowly and little.
He named himself.
Yeah, and Paulus, of course, means lowly and little. But you just read Chabaouk. What did it say of this moron that would speak out against circumcision? He is lowly and little. The basis for the Sermon on the Mount is it's reflected.
I love Yahweh's sense of humor.
Yeah.
It really is. Right. Yeah, it's so essential that you understand what God's communicating here on circumcision and why it's essential to participation in the covenant. It's the thing that helps us not only remember, it's the thing we should be talking about, because the more we talk about it, the more we understand its importance and what it represents, the fewer Christians will be in the world. The fewer people who will squander their souls based upon the faith of death. You know, it was somebody sent me an article talking about how in Bavaria, part of Germany, they've just approved of putting crosses on the doorways in the public buildings to reflect Christian values. And you know, the crosses they're putting there is all the same. It's a dead God on a stick. The Roman Catholic crucifix. Can you imagine anything so morbid, a death cult, so disgusting, that their primary image would be dead God on a stick?
Well, they love it. It puts God in a weak position, allowing them to take control and power over him.
Oh, of course, we killed God. Here's dead God on a stick. There's agony God. Oh, I mean, it's just so pathetic. How in the world did a religion that disgusting, that pathetic, become the most popular in human history if it weren't for the fact that no one who is religious understands the importance of shamar, to observe, to closely examine and carefully consider, or bien, to understand?
Well, didn't Shabbat finish off later or before that saying, you know, they never even ask about Paul. They never questioned him. Hence the name of your book. I mean, it's, think of the term. They even have anything to ask.
Yeah, don't even think to ask. And of course, Shaul means questioning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. A place of questioning. Yeah,
yeah.
That's what it was. It connects something. For goodness sakes, these are not our dumb.
No, these are not. It's so obvious.
Well, somebody pointed out
here,
all of them.
Yeah. Right. 2.5 billion Christians, all believing a faith that has a 0% possibility of being true and is overtly counterproductive. Condemning everyone who's ever succumbed to it to die. And those who promote it to eternal separation and hell. In Shaul, Sheol. And a son, Ben. Oh, you know, son of a gun. God does know the word son. I wonder why he didn't use it previously when he used the car to remember. And a son, a male child, of 8 days. You shall circumcise with regard to your every male, Zakar, so that they might remember to approach throughout your dwelling places and generations' door. Those naturally born, Yalid, in the home, Be'eth, basis of covenant. And also, Wa, those really wanting to be, Kesef, acquired and included, Mikna, every son of foreign lands who relationally, to make this connection, to show the way, are not from your seed. Barashit, in the beginning, Genesis 7:12. All right. Ben. Pretty simple word. It's only two letters, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Ba. Yeah, Ba. What is Ba? Right? Is that a family home?
A house and family.
House, family,
and
family.
Look at the letter Nun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sperm. How long before humanity even knew what a sperm was? A child in the home.
That's
pretty graphic language. A child is conceived in the home. Son. Powerful. Of 8. Shamanah. Shamanah is great because it is it's from Shamin, which is olive oil, which is symbolic of the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, of course, very, very similar to the two, I think, the two most important verbs relative to what God asks of us in the entire Torah, Shama and Shamar. Shama means to closely examine and carefully consider, to use your eyes to focus on these words, and Shama means to listen to what God has to say.
Yeah, without which you're going nowhere.
Right. Shamana. So on the eighth day, eight is also symbolic of eternity, of the number that follows with when sixth man is created on the sixth day, or the carbon-based life form with the atomic number of six, combined with God, with Yahweh, who is one, equates to seven, God's view of perfection. The number which follows is eight, eternity. So a son of 8 days, you shall circumcise more. Okay? You shall circumcise. You shall cut off and separate his foreskin, scribed using the niphal stem, denoting the relationship between, that's indicating here that the parents benefit from doing as God has requested, and in the imperfect conjugation, which tells us there will never be an abatement of this instruction, and the benefits endure for all time. With regard to law, every kol, male, zakar, so that they might remember. Zakar, extremely important Hebrew verb. The verb zakar means to remember, to memorialize, to recognize one's status. And since nouns are defined by their verbs, the primary meaning of zakar as a noun must be to remember.
Yeah, I found this in those studies, which is even, I thought a little bit even a little richer. It says to remember, but recalling of events of the past or to act upon the past events, to reenact a past event as a memorial, is a male offspring, is a memory based on past events and often through an annual festival feast, which evokes the Moed Mikros. It's these little words that just are so pregnant.
Yeah, the event, of course, is that Yahweh intervened and introduced himself to Abram long after he had walked out of Babylon, walked away from that which was Babylonia. And he met him and introduced himself, and he laid down a number of conditions that memorialized the way. And that's
how it's interesting. You know what the verbal root of zakar means, right? And it's a verbal root, which, you know, in Hebrew, verbs define the nouns.
Right.
The verbal root means to commit to memory.
Yeah.
If you were to zakar something, you would be committing it to memory. So it would almost be fair to say that zakar as a noun when referencing people would be males who remember or who have committed to memory.
That's correct. Yes, exactly. It's in our face. It's hard to forget this now.
So tell me why I need a rabbi to explain this to me.
You don't.
because
the religions have done a great job of convincing people they are not smart enough to think for themselves. And society in general has done this. We do the same thing with religion and everything, you know, politics and everything else. We've convinced people that they are not smart enough to think for themselves. They need someone to interpret everything for them.
Well, that's in the Abraham story, too. His brother sleeps, snores. They just don't care.
I know. They just don't think it through. Approach throughout, and this is door. Door is a marvelous word, Ben. It's just kind of carelessly rendered generations. And, you know, generation is a fine term.
Yeah.
Your generations. Well, you know, generations would be ongoing, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you can't have until Jebus, because guess what? Jebus is a descendant of Abraham and Sarah.
Yeah.
So it would have even been for him, wouldn't it?
Now you got a problem.
So a little problem you got there. But door isn't just generations. And generation is a perfectly good term for this, but it also means your protected households, your extended families.
Safe dwelling, yeah.
Right. And the word speaks of elevating and extending lives for every race, for every place, and for every period of time. That's why what follows it is for those naturally born. Yalid, that's important because, oh, by the way, when Yeshaya is speaking about this child that will come unto us, it is a child that is naturally born.
Mm-hmm.
So the naturally born. Where? In the home. You know, what's interesting, by the way, is that any child born into a family, this would apply to. Those naturally born in the home. Well, that would be any child born into a family. And those wanting to be, kasef, those deeply desiring, strongly yearning, passionately longing. You know, it's, I don't know how they get it, but somehow most English Bibles get kasef as purchased. And then they would get mikna as money.
With money.
I don't have any problem.
Something before we get into that one?
Sure.
There's something I wanted to bring up, and it's something I came across in my studies I thought was very fascinating, and it's just one of those things that just, I love when science proves Yahweh's word. You know why? You know what's really unique about the eighth day of a child's life?
Yeah.
So there are three factors that are blood clotting is depending on. Platelet levels, prothrombin levels, and vitamin K. And vitamin K is actually responsible for the reduction of the prothrombin levels. And while there's an adequate level on the fifth day through the seventh day, there's a unique thing that happens on the eighth day that will never, ever happen again in a man's entire life. They are at over 100% of normal. Prothrombin levels are over 100% of normal. It's the highest it will ever be in any person's life, making it the most ideal time scientifically to perform the procedure and have a almost 100% success rate.
Yeah.
Anytime before that, there especially when it wasn't being done in a hospital and sanitary location, there was chances of infections, chances of bleeding out. Yeah. But at that day, it was the absolute most perfect day to do it in a human's entire life.
Right.
How awesome is that? The science on that just proves. Yeah, there's no way they could have known that then.
By design. By design. And it's not just that God said, "Oh, I want it to be. I'll design it. It'll be the eighth day. That's going to happen." It's the eighth day. It's happening because of the fact that
symbolic
can be eternity.
Yeah.
That's why Sukkah, the final camping out with God, is the one celebration that's eternal. There's an eighth day.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about it before. You know, if Yahusha was born on the first day of Sukkah, he would have been circumcised on the last day of Sukkah.
That's correct.
Very good.
Absolutely.
I might have to step away for a little bit, guys. I got a daughter here wanting me to read bedtime stories to her. So
okay.
I'll be back in a little bit.
Okay.
Priority.
Tell me, when I looked it up, I had, because it's translated easily as quickly, rather, or as money, but I also found that it's silver, which is redemption money. You have the silver that paid for Yahusha, if they paid to take care of, to find him, and then you have a longing and desire, which is the more important part. But then when you, it also says that the metal, it talks about the silver as being the metal that's highly polished, that can be extremely highly polished and reflective, which of course, with reflective light, that's what ultimately we're trying to become, is to reflect the Yah's light.
Right. That's how mirrors are designed.
Even though some of these are not exactly what we're looking for,
they have thoughts, but, you know.
If you dig a little deeper, you just think about them and you say, well, wait a minute, you know.
Yeah, silver is the most reflective surface. That's why it's the back background of mirrors, but behind the glass to be reflective. You know, I don't even have a problem with purchase with money because how have adoptions taken place and how do they take place around the world?
Well, most of the time you have to buy a child.
That's right.
Purchase with parents or somebody.
That's exactly right. It's purchase with money. So I don't have a problem with that. It's just that that's not the verbal root, not the primary meaning of Geshe's Mikna. It means to really want to be acquired and included. Well, acquired, well, you're acquired into God's family. He paid a tremendous price to ransom us.
I think so, sure.
Yeah.
But the other part, you have to have the desire, or you won't go there.
Right. To be purchased and obtained from Kana, to be redeemed, speaking of adoption. And it's every son of foreign lands, just in case you didn't get it, and somehow you were a thoughtless moron who believed the Christian pastor or priest who is lying to you, trying to justify Paul's poison pen, and says that circumcision thing were for the Jews, and you weren't smart enough to say, wait a minute, there were no Jews at the time that this instruction was given. It says, and all, every, Cole, every son of foreign lands who is not relationally from your seed.
Yeah.
All means all. That's all means. Nekar, places where they are not properly valued and appreciated, which would be the lands of Islam and Christianity. God appreciates us. Man does not. Man devalues humanity through religion and politics and militarism and economic schemes. So Nekar means that circumcision is for everybody. If you want to be included, if that's your desire, as a man, you need to be circumcised. Complete repudiation of Christianity.
Yeah, I found this whole thing so comforting. You know, there's absolutely no way. Every lie they throw out is destroyed here. Every religion is destroyed here.
Yeah.
Including, you know, all of them.
Yeah, God's extraordinarily clear. The reason that Judaism is destroyed here, even though Rabbinic Judaism has circumcision is never done for the purpose of remembering what Yahweh said. Circumcision is never talked about truthfully and proclaimed as essential to the covenant. They don't speak of circumcision as the fifth condition to be part of the covenant family. And so, since they do it in a religious way with no association of any kind with the Torah, for them it's a waste of time. Waste of effort. And for Christianity, of course, is literally the religion is based upon an avoidance and antagonism towards circumcision. And
you can't open up that box.
No.
How do you stand before people and say, okay, this is what, you know, and say half of what you've said today and not get them to go straight to the Torah and read it?
Right. Like the guy that was...
I mean, it just destroys everything, and it starts to answer
the
question.
The guy that leads the cabinet Bible study and the Oval Office of the White House, he's a take-it-or-leave-it sort of guy. So, he's speaking about homosexuality and being evil. It's in God's Word. That's what God's Word says. And then someone will say, well, God's Word says, you know, if somebody's a homosexual, kill him. Well, those are the laws for a different time and a different place. They don't pertain to us. Okay.
You're ready to go now.
So, anyway, all of God's testimony doesn't pertain to you.
Okay. And that's true.
And it's true. It doesn't pertain to you. Because God doesn't pertain to you. The door doesn't pertain to you. It really is true. And they're not just smart enough to say, wait a minute, everything God said is true. So there must be a way for me to understand the association between death and these perversions of sexuality that include homosexuality, but also incest and rape and bestiality. So the idea is that if you pervert the idea of what God is trying to convey, a family of husband and wife, mother and father, coming together to conceive children as Yahweh, as our Heavenly Father, and the spiritual mother, the set-apart spirit, come together to enable us to become part of Yahweh's covenant family. If you pervert that, then the chances are that you are not going to understand God's message and you're going to die. It's fairly easy to understand the purpose of things if you think about them and try to understand them as opposed to just saying, oh, that's a law that doesn't pertain to me.
Have you gotten a single email in the last 4 or 5 weeks where somebody said, this is just too difficult for me to understand?
No.
No.
No, in fact, I get them instead. The last one I just read said that we closed the program last week by saying what we're conveying is inspired. What we're writing is inspired. And we're not saying that it's inspired in the sense of Yahweh, inspired Dod and Moshe and Yashaya and others to convey his testimony through them. It's inspired because we are examining that testimony that God has, that God inspired. So
yeah, we're reading and writing and reciting rather what they were inspired to write.
So any thoughtful explanation and conveyance of what God inspired is by definition inspired. And it's inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's one of the things I think that those who pray to God for understanding. Why would you do that?
I'll pray and start reading.
Why don't you just read what he wrote?
Yeah.
You want to be inspired? Read what he wrote. What he wrote is inspiring. And you don't need anything more. In fact, we already have so much that we couldn't explain it all if we had 1,000 lifetimes. You know, it was Jackie, as I was, last week, was talking about how I'd never come to understand why Yahweh used help in association with Chawah, and why Chawah was given to Adam. And it was to help him understand the covenant. Now, there was more to it than that. In the chapter I wrote on it, we spoke about it also gave him a genuine choice, because man is a social animal, and if there wasn't for Chawah, then God would be chosen by default. It would be chosen. It would either be, I'm going to go crazy, or I'm going to have this relationship with God because there ain't no other option. And so I was thinking about, so should we add to the chapter? I think it's chapter one of Observations for Our Time, this new insight. And I read it and said, that's the right place to put it, but does it really belong there, or are we better off just recognizing that every time we think about something God said, we're going to be inspired to understand more?
Well, it does demonstrate that we're growing, and there's a payoff for engaging in this activity.
Correct. That's the payoff. We're always learning, always growing, always inspired when we read Yah's testimony. So this is, again, extremely straightforward. Then he says, he should absolutely circumcise him, definitely cutting off the foreskin, mul, of the naturally born, yeled, in your home, and also those desiring to be included, as well as those who are acquired with your money. This shall be my family-oriented covenant relationship in the flesh, serving as a means to approach an everlasting and eternal family-oriented covenant relationship. To hell with Christianity. blown up in smoke right there. Not only is God saying the flesh is good and that this covenant is being cut in the flesh. Now, you might say, well, you just said it was the foreskin was separated from the flesh, and therefore circumcision is about being disassociated from the flesh. That's true. But we do it in the flesh because we have to do it while we're mortal, while we're physical beings, if we want to enjoy immortality. This is something you cannot do as a spiritual being. You have to do it now so that you become a spiritual being.
Right.
And the covenant is
right now.
Olam. Is there any part of Olam that could be conceived to be up until Paul contradicted all of this?
Mm-hmm. No, I did everything I could come up with on Olam, from eternal to Olam, which is the verb hidden, concealed, a vanishing point, you know, which is out there in the beyond, great beyond Netzach. Mm-hmm. Everlasting perpetual noun is a noun, rather. Netzach, the verb, is enduring, continual, preeminent. It is perpetual from ad. The verb from adah, for ad is adah. Pass on, advance, adorn. It's used in Job, I found, where it's a metaphor used to deck yourself out into majesty, which implies this becomes... your joining of the royal family of Yahweh. I don't think that's a stretch. Then a place in the more ancient, earlier beginnings of the understanding, it would be a place beyond the horizon, a time and a place where that cannot be perceived, much the way we think in terms of now, and, oh gosh, fifth, sixth, and seventh dimensions. From Alum, which is beyond the field of vision of time and space. That would be the people in the time of Abraham, when they heard this, they would have thought of it in those terms because they had to have something rather concrete eternity can trip you a little bit in a modern philosophical view of this, where to them it was very straightforward. It's what's beyond the horizon we can't see, we don't know is out there, but it's way beyond, you know, things like that. So they do it very concrete. So whether you do it concretely or more modern lexicons, it still comes out forever and ever and ever and ever.
Everlasting.
And sorry, you don't have a choice. There's nothing else you get. You know, if he says that, he means that.
There's one covenant, always singular, and it is forever. That means when Yerbiyah is being inspired to write about the renewal of it, the Kadash, it can't be a new one. It's not a new one that replaces an old one. It can't be as the Christian New Testament and the Christian New Covenant. That is impossible based upon Olam. There's one covenant, and it is eternal. It's as simple as that. You can't change the words. Those are the words. One covenant, and it's eternal. That means that in Yirmiyah 31, the one and only eternal covenant can be restored.
Mm-hmm.
It can be renewed. It can be reaffirmed. And that's exactly what happens. And as you find... there is this renewal and this reaffirmation takes place with Yisrael and Yahudah. And the one difference between this covenant as it was being presented to Abraham and as it is presented to us and its ultimate reaffirmation and renewal, which means increasing light, is that the Torah, Yahweh is going to write His Torah, His instructions, right in our hearts, right inside of us, incorporating them into the nature of our being. I think we'll have a pretty good understanding of it at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we need those instructions so that we get the most out of eternity.
Well, the more you're enlightened and empowered, the more you need a governor. So to speak, you know, we could do some damage, or we could, you know, you just don't get in a Ferrari for the first time and say, oh, I'll take it around the block.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, the previous statement, God made it clear that you can be naturally born or adopted into the family.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that the means to this is still circumcision. And then he repeats himself. He should absolutely circumcise him, definitely cutting off the foreskin. This is mole, mole. You know, when you repeat a word, and particularly verbs in Hebrew, and he's being emphatic, absolutely.
An intensifier.
Right, it's an intensifier. Mole, mole. It's like equals MC squared. Speed of light times the speed of light. This is mole times mole. He can ward off the deadly and debilitating curse by way of this oath, promising to cease what he is currently doing, to turn around and face in the opposite direction while committing to ward off threats to his well-being by changing his priorities and making a binding promise to undergo circumcision. Again, scribed in the nipple stem, denoting the genuineness of this relationship while stressing the benefit accrued to the parent and the infinitive absolute, which intensifies the importance of the act. And the imperfect conjugation telling us that this instructional circumcision will endure uninterrupted throughout all time with ongoing benefits for both the naturally born in your home and also those desiring to be included, as well as those who are acquired with your money.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys talked about this while I was out, but yeah, the whole idea of, you know, translating kisop mikna as those purchased with money.
Yes.
Think about it in terms of free will. Yeah, that'd be basically forcing someone into something, which Yahweh's not about. Yahweh's all about free will. So
right.
If you take that translation of it, that traditional understanding of it, you have Yahweh, you know, telling these people to literally take, you know, and force something on someone that they didn't agree to. What about Yahweh's
right.
nature makes you think that's anything he would ever want?
Correct.
So if you have an alternative understanding of the words, one that fits Yahweh's nature and one that doesn't, which one are you inclined to go with?
I'm going to go with adoption, with something choosing to
yeah.
be adopted.
I don't know about you. I consider myself that. I am Kesaf Mikna. I strongly
yeah, I
desire to be purchased by Yahweh.
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to be inspired by him. That was my choice. What I strongly desire, have always desired, still desire, will always desire, will always care about. This is my will. I want to be adopted into his family. And you know, this does not create a distinction between the naturally born and the adopted. It's inclusive
no.
of the naturally born
thing.
And adopted. Right. What he's saying,
it doesn't matter
so
which
saying,
one you are, it's the same path.
Right. So this is really important here. This is not a distinction between the naturally born, this would be ultimately Yisrael and Yehuda, and those of foreign lands who are adopted into Yahweh's family. It's inclusive of both.
Yes.
That's so very important. It's repeated over and over again.
So it's the same as when Yahweh says later, you know, there is but one Torah for the native born and for the
right.
you know, strangers.
Right.
You know, there is
yes.
but one Torah, one path, one way, one covenant,
right.
one family.
One family.
Right. One God.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
That is correct. Very powerful instruction and completely consistent and now the only difference as we move to the next statement is that there is we're going to now speak of the antithesis of the circumcised. So God's going to make a distinction now. So before it wasn't a distinction between, but the inclusion of both. Now it's the exclusion and an absolute distinction. Therefore, the uncircumcised, Arel, the stubborn, unresponsive, untrusting, and unreliant, those unwilling to listen, who are unobservant, those who are not separated and who are unwilling to be set apart, as males, those male individuals who fail to remember this, who relationally are not circumcised with regard to the flesh of his foreskin. That soul, nefesh, that soul shall be cut off. that soul shall be excluded and banished, karat, from her family. By way of association, they violated and broke by creating two separate variations, thereby disassociating themselves from my family-oriented covenant relationship.
It's one thing they disassociated themselves. Verse to Christianity ever written.
Oh, good God. I mean, everything we've read here is wholly and completely destructive to Christianity. And Christian, you got no damn excuse. You carry the book of Genesis around with you. You talk about the creation story in it. You talk about the Ten Commandments in it, even though there are ten instructions and statements. Statement, not one of them is a command, but you don't know that. You carry it around. You tell the story of Noah and the Ark. No, you don't understand it. You speak of the faith of Abraham, even though he had no faith. You tell all the stories in it. You pretend like it's inspired by your God, and yet every word contradicts your religion. Look at these. Just absolutely destroyed.
It was probably my third time through going back and re-looking at circumcision. And before, I was looking at everything to do with mule. And it was about my third time through doing this that I realized, you know, I was ignoring all the verse, everything related to Arel, which is the word for uncircumcised. So I started going back into those. And when I found it, man, there is like no greater insult in Yahweh's vocabulary than Arel. It is one of the most derogatory terms you will find in all of the Torah, Prophet, and Psalms. It is an incredibly negative word.
Right. Unresponsive, stubborn, untrusting, unreliant, unwilling to listen, unobservant. You know what's interesting, too?
Yeah.
And in Yahweh's vocabulary with Hebrew, almost all negations in Hebrew are not separate words. To negate a Hebrew concept like this program is brought to you by the Hebrew verb mol, all you have to do is put lo in front of it.
Lo.
Yeah, lo or ein.
Not.
In front of it. Yeah, not. Not or no. And so this is one of the very few times in Hebrew that the negation of circumcision, to not be circumcised, is not the verb circumcision negated.
Mm-hmm.
It's an entirely different word.
But there is a separate word for it as well.
Yes. So here, God chose a separate verb to speak about those people who are not circumcised, and he calls them stubborn, unresponsive, untrusting, and unreliant, unwilling to listen, and unobservant. What? All of these things that I want you to do. I want you to rely on me. Right. I want you to rely on me. I want you to be open to what I'm sharing with you. I want you to listen to me. I want you to be responsive. I want you to trust me. All of that. Arel is the opposite.
I can maybe even spell it.
If Arel is just means uncircumcised, like in this one sentence, he uses both lo mul and Arel.
Right.
They're both used in the same sentence. So why did he choose one in one place and one in the other? There's a reason for everything Yahweh does. That's because there is more to Arel than just uncircumcised.
That is correct.
And it's understanding that is where you understand just how damning this word is and this idea is and how much Yahweh
lo-mo
hates it.
Right. Lo-mo follows Arel. So you cannot just simply translate Arel as uncircumcised because lo mul follows it, and he wouldn't have chosen two entirely different approaches unless we're supposed to understand the things associated with each word.
Nuances
and with Arel, it's therefore the stubborn, the unresponsive, the untrusting, the unreliant, those who are unwilling to listen, those who are not observant. As
you know, it's just like why he chose the car instead of just saying ish to speak of males.
Yeah. Right. Who relationally are not circumcised, who are not willing to change their direction, their priorities, to make this binding promise to ward off the ultimate curse. And what God says here is, with regard to the flesh, there is no way, and you know, I used to write books with a fellow named Ken, a really, really fine man, who could just never get away from Pauline Christianity in Paul's letters. And you know, his justification for Paul's attack on circumcision is that you know, that circumcision became a spiritual thing. And circumcision, you know, baptism is the new circumcision. God's saying really quick right here, no, it's not a spiritual thing. So the flesh. Right now, I'm talking to you about the flesh. You're going to do this in the flesh. Completely destroys Christianity.
Right. The word "harar" here is the most. It is an incredibly damning word to be associated with Yahweh's covenant. Nullifying, disassociating from, you know, violating, destroying. You know, it is, when it comes to, you put it in terms of Yahweh's covenant, harar is the most damning thing you could do. I can't think of a single word that would be more damning than harar here.
No, that's just every bit of this. And what's interesting is that to be cut off, to be excluded, to be banished from what? The family. Yeah, from the family. And then he makes it, says, you know, by association, they violated and broke. This is what you were just talking about, JB. They violated and broke by creating two separate variations. Well, who broke the covenant? Who violated the covenant by creating two separate variations? That opened the Christian Bible.
Paul,
what do you
think,
find?
Of two covenants?
Right.
The covenant with Hagar and the covenant with Sarah?
Right. And not only did he, and in Romans, he makes a big deal about the two different covenants. And God said that if you create this myth of two different covenants, you're dead. You are absolutely, unequivocally separated from his family. Excluded. You know, the Christians with their Old and New Testaments. No, I'm sorry. God just says, no, that's the plague of death right there.
Oh, he says you did it to yourself. That's the part that's really damning. It's not even that you're separated and nullified. You did it to yourself.
Right. And what's interesting here, too, is that this is not God saying you're going to be separated from the people, you're going to be separated from the nation of Israel. This is the person's soul who is stubborn, who is created this myth of, and bought into this myth of two different testaments. The soul of that individual will be disassociated from the covenant.
And it's from her family.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of men who have not been circumcised, men will be cut off from her family.
Her family.
Obviously, that isn't speaking of his family.
No. Her family.
And people, her family, ignore the nuances of the language.
Right. Yeah, it was her family. Feminine. Covenant is a feminine noun. By way of association, they violated and broke by creating two separate variations, thereby disassociating themselves from my family covenant relationship. If you are a new covenant person, if you are a New Testament person, you have separated yourself from God. You have violated his covenant. You are forever estranged from his family. And there is no other way into heaven. 100% of those who enter heaven are covenant members.
Yeah. You know that the real is being led by a man's perspective in the letters.
Yes.
A yin, a rosh, and a lamb.
Yeah.
He puts about everywhere. Everything y'all said, I've got. So I absolutely can confirm everything you said. It is a nasty verse.
It is a nasty word.
I think that's the single most damning verse to Christianity. This verse alone destroys Christianity better than any other, in my opinion.
Well, it gives it no wiggle room.
Right. But more than that, what it says is that God has a singular path that he has provided into his home. And if you choose that path, you can have absolute and total confidence that the door has been opened for you and that God's arms are outstretched waiting to hug you as you walk in the door. But if you choose to be stubborn, to be unresponsive, to not trust him, to not rely on what he said, to not listen, to be unobservant, then you need to know that you are excluded from his family. Black and white.
No, that's the word. Rail, I forgot. Rail was the one where you find unskilled, which is like unskilled in learning or ability to understand, which, you know, when he called earlier, in one of the verses earlier we were talking about the last week.
Unskilled, right.
Wait,
and
you'll
think about that. I know when not being a good speaker, he says he is of a law lip. He is of uncircumcised lip. It's
right.
The word he uses to describe his inability.
Now, you remember
right.
When you keep your lips together, yeah.
Yeah, unresponsive. Wow. It is, we will obviously return to this statement. Because this is so powerful, I want to be careful here that we are constantly hammering on Pauline Christianity, because all of this proves that Paul was an outright liar, a false prophet, a false messenger, the Antichrist, the plague of death is Paul and the religion that he created in Christianity, and while all of that's true, there is something far more important to convey, and that is that this is the fifth of five conditions to be part of the covenant, understanding, remembering circumcision's role and how circumcision is the sign of this covenant that represents our commitment to it. And that if we are circumcised and we understand its purpose relative to God's family, we are part of his family. And if we choose not to listen to him, not to trust him, not to rely on him, instead rely on that other guy that contradicted him, that we are absolutely and unequivocally disassociated from his family. So that's the primary meaning here is, it's for everyone that wants to be part of the family of God, whether you're naturally born into it or adopted into it. That's all inclusive. That's not a distinction. The distinction is a realm. Those who do not listen, those who are not observant, those who are stubborn and unresponsive and untrusting and unreliant of whom? God himself. And therefore his Torah instruction in this regard. You're excluded from his home. Faith isn't going to help you. Worship is not going to help you. Donations are not going to help you. Being good is not going to help you. So going to a Bible study is not going to help you. Being patriotic is not going to help you. Only one thing is going to help you. And that's recognizing that you need to listen to what God says, observe what he has conveyed to us, be responsive to him, trust him, rely on him. In fact, the antithesis of Arel is comprised of the very conditions of the covenant. So this is important stuff. Very few things that God could say that are more important for us to understand. That's why you've devoted years now, JB, to learning is everything that can be known about why God conveyed the condition of circumcision. And so as we've learned here, to not be circumcised, to be unresponsive to God's word, excludes an individual from participating in the covenant, which means they don't receive any of the benefits, which means cannot be immortal, they cannot be perfected and therefore saved, cannot be adopted into God's family, they cannot be enriched, they cannot be empowered. And in other places we learn that without circumcision, you cannot participate in Passover. Without Passover, you cannot be immortal. At other places,
at this point, I've examined every verse that uses the word mole, but really everything you could possibly need to know about it, you can find in this one right here. Its very first use tells you everything about its importance to Yahweh. Everything else is just, you know, icing on the cake. This is the most instructive verse in regards of mole.
Yes. And of course, it's even more important set into the context, because God said, I want you to do this as a means to remember. I want you to do this so that you understand me, so that you understand this relationship that we are creating here. I want you to speak about it and speak truthfully about it. I want you to recognize that it's inclusive of those who are naturally born and those who choose to be and desire to be adopted, purchased by, acquired by God. I want you to know that failing to do this, to be stubborn, to be unresponsive, to be unwilling to listen to what I have to say and be observant regarding what I've conveyed, well, that's going to forever estrange you from my family. That's why he says that no uncircumcised man will ever enter heaven. Straightforward. You have no excuse here. And there
is unequivocal.
It's unequivocal, and there is no room here for Paul. Paul is estranged from God's family. There's a 0% chance that God inspired Paul to write his goddamn letters. Zero. He is forever estranged from him. And if you believe him, you'll be forever estranged from God, too. All right, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Powerful stuff. We'll pick up here again next week. Hope you're feeling better, Kirk. You didn't have your call, so you... that was good, your daughter. Yeah, and your daughter, JB, was a quick read on her stories tonight.
Oh, yes. We've got it's pretty much the same three stories every night that she wants, but yeah, she's been wanting Daddy to read them, so I'm just eating that up, so I'm never going to say
that's
no.
Good stuff. That's good stuff. It was one of my favorites, too. Read the stories, and you know, the thing is, too, if you ad-lib the stories, they know. That's not what it says. Read it right.
Yep.
Read it right. That's not what it says. Yeah, that's right.
My daughter is very much my child. She's a creature of habit, and the more we keep things into the routine, the better she does. So, in the interest of trying to help her sleep through the night, and, well, really help my wife, because she's the one that wakes up, because I'll sleep through, you know, a tornado could hit the house, and I'd probably still sleep through it. So, if we can keep her on her routine, she'll sleep through the night better, and that's better for everyone. So,
yeah, absolutely. All right, my friend. Good night.
Hey, guys. It was great fun.
Yeah.
Take care. I'll talk to you next week.
Bye. Shalom.
Bye.